back. I'm Gary Parr.
I'm Jennifer Kopasz-Rose.
And you're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for the needlework artists. Sorry about last week's break. Actually, well, I don't know why I apologize for these breaks, because I don't have a choice. You know, I had to do this business trip, and at some point something has to give. And the same thing is going to happen at the end of the month. I got to do another one. And, happens.
Yep.
Not much I can do about it, because the paying job says do it, so I got to go do it.
Yeah.
So we'll have a Stitch Hour next week, and at this juncture it'll be a Stitch and Chat type thing, and if I get a chance to do some testing, we'll offer it on YouTube and Facebook. But I'm so frustrated with that, because I did all the testing for Facebook, and then the software I use did it up. No, it was Facebook that broke things. The software didn't. It was Facebook that broke things. Took a week to get it fixed, and it's like, oh, geez, now I got to go through and test everything again. And
oh my gosh, because you got a new software, right?
Well, yeah, it's the software I've been using, but they had a major upgrade.
Right.
And one of the, because it always was that you could broadcast to one outlet. And of course, YouTube is the one. And then if you wanted to do two or more, then you had to go through a service. So that was another monthly fee. And, you know, and it was always, people are always complaining. It was kind of worked like most of the time.
Right.
I don't need that hassle. And then with this big upgrade that you actually had, it was one of those where you actually have to pay. Then they made it so you can really do as many channels as you want. And when I set it up with Facebook, it worked perfect right out of the gate. And then Facebook made a change and broke everything. And so now it's fixed, but then I haven't had time to test. So I'm going to try. So that'll be next Wednesday. And then I don't know. I don't have a calendar in front of me. But anyway, we'll do the every other week thing until the end of the month, where we'll have a week off. And then we'll be into November. And best thing to do is subscribe. Subscribe to Instagram. Subscribe to YouTube. And then you'll know what's going on.
Right.
That's how it works. Sunday's guest is Susan Faye Shower John. Susan is the partner of Gail Patterson, who was last Sunday's guest. Spiralis Gallery. And so Susan is the curator director, and then she and, Gail is the curator director. That's who we talked to last Sunday. Well, Susan is her partner in this gallery, but Susan is an incredible artist. She does wood turning, oil painting, colored pencil, and this is high-end painting stuff. I mean, this is serious stuff. Colored pencil, and then some of the most amazing thread painting pieces that I've seen. I'm not even sure. It almost looks like they're quilts, but I don't think they are. And they're mostly animals and wildlife, and they both live in Maryland, so you get a lot of Chesapeake Bay influence.
Right.
But, just beautiful stuff. And her woodwork, her bowls and stuff. Literal works of art. Yeah. So she's, she's Sunday's guest. And then she'll be the partner with, she's partnering with Gail to open up this physical space for Spiralis Gallery. So that'll be Sunday. Cool stuff.
Nice.
Yep. It was one of those where, okay, she's a partner. She does a bunch of needlework, textile art, needlework. And then I did the research on her, and it's like, whoa, this, her dad is apparently a fairly well-known artist. And she got, her BS is in biology. And then she went on and did, she didn't specify, but anyway, graduate degrees in neurology.
Oh, wow.
And somewhere along the way, haven't recorded with her yet, somewhere along the way, she decided, skip that noise, I'm doing art.
Interesting.
And she's got something in the White House permanent collection.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This is serious stuff. Yeah. So.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, much to learn. So anyway, and then she's partnering with Gail Patterson. And then once they get the gallery set up, then on a Wednesday night show, Gail is going to take us through the gallery and show us all of the things. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. So that'll be cool. So that's Sunday. Yeah. Yep. And then just call your attention to EGA's virtual lectures. Really some good ones. One on Mexican samplers is on October, I didn't write it down, but anyway, deadline is October 12th. So tomorrow, if you're listening on the Wednesday, this goes up. October 12th is the deadline to register for that. And then the next one after that, which is, I think is in November, is on restoring and preserving needlework. And it's a you know, some expert who's doing it for needleworkers. It's in the description for needleworkers. So I think it's, I derived from that it was going to be something that would help us better understand how to protect our needlework. So,
right.
And then Fiber Talk and the number 5, all one word, gets you a $5 discount on virtual lectures, whether it's previous recordings or not. And you got to be a member of EGA, but you know, why not? So, but yeah, use that FiberTalk5 code. Save $5 because you have to pay for these things.
Right.
But as we've said many times, just tell me, send me a bill for $60 for the year. I'll buy them all.
Yeah.
You know, because they're good. Yeah. I mean, they're really good. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yep.
So. Yep. So that's all that. I'm still working on the Sarah Parr sampler. I was making really good progress, and then I had to do that trip, and I had momentum, and
just get back on it.
Yep. And who was it? Oh, I forget now her name. I did a post about it on Instagram. Who discovered that I'd missed a bird in the previous band? I was like, thank you.
Yep.
Because I thought, oh, no way. I went back and like, yes way. There's the big spot where that bird goes. Yep.
Oh, no.
You know, and I wondered how much that happens. Because when I get this thing done, one thing I'm going to go through is I'm going to get the picture of the off the chart. And I'm just going to go through and check off and make sure that I have every element.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wonder how many times people, especially in samplers, skip.
Yeah. Or... you know, I would, you know, especially when I do those Paula Vons and they have, it's confetti-ish, you know, and I'll like go across a whole row where it's like, okay, skip 2, do 1, skip 3, do 2, you do that. And then you come back and sometimes you'll even go down to catch one that's like, oh, there's this one hanging down here and you'll get it. And then on the way back, I'll miss it. So then I'll have a one legger hanging out there. And then I'll be looking at it later and I'll see the little one legger. I'm like, oh, and then I have to find the color.
Right.
Do the other leg.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. You got to use 4 or 5 inches of thread to do one leg on a cross. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, I use the loop method and I'm pretty good with my little needle. Maybe like 3 inches.
But still, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
And all the while you're going, what's wrong with me that I didn't do that? Yeah.
Oh, I know why. Cause it's the way that sometimes I make a path that I go, I'll do like 4 rows that I go across and I'll go up and down cause of the way it is.
Uh-huh.
And then on the way back, I'll miss it for some reason, especially if it's already a lot filled in and it's not just hanging out there cause they're pretty dense.
Yeah.
Then stitching, it's almost full coverage too. So, and I'll just miss it. And then I'll be like, oh. Now, I've never had one that I've noticed yet framed that has a one legger.
Caught them all, huh?
That wasn't meant to be a one legger. She has a lot of, you know, shading that's done in one strand with one with only half cross.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the shading.
Yeah. Yep. Well, my bird's back in place, and
nice.
But I'm checking that sampler when I get done. When it comes off the scroll, it's getting checked every element, because
yeah,
I would really hate to have it framed and go, oh, another bird was supposed to go there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So working on that.
Good.
And then Cindy and Beth and I started. Well, I was riding my bike, so I didn't start. But Clara Warshauer's frog, goldwork, 3D thing.
Oh, and, is that the heart that's Beth's been making
yeah,
on Instagram?
Yeah, Beth did
oh,
the heart.
Oh, that's really gorgeous.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And she showed lots of the progress photos. So at first you're like, huh, it's interesting. And then it keeps going, oh, it's getting better. And then the last one is like, oh, wow, it's really pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. Now, there's a sword that goes through that.
Yeah, she was saying, and she's nervous to poke it.
I don't blame her. I'd be scared to death. Absolutely scared to death, yeah. But, yeah, so we're doing this little frog, Claire's little frog, and the first, it's a two-session class, and the first one was this past Saturday, and I was out in the hinterlands riding my bike, but so I got the video. I think we're going to do a live show and just work on it so people can see what's involved.
Well, that'd be cool.
Coming up, yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I got to actually sit down with the cloth and get it going, but I will. Yep. So, and then you're doing this Under the Garden Moon class, and it's it's embroidery. I was surprised.
Yeah, it's like Sue Spargo-type style embroidery, you know, mm-hmm. where you take stitches and then you weave and do all the fun stuff. And my friend Nancy works every now and then at Colchester Mills Fabric in Connecticut. And she teaches classes and stuff. And she's doing the block of the month. So at the Under the Garden Moon website, she has like a block of the month thing. And this was offered as a block of the month. And it's still going on. So Nancy's part of that. But then another lady that works at Colchester Mills, I forgot her name, she finished the little embroidery book. And Nancy saw it, was like, oh my gosh, that is so gorgeous and pretty. And then she got thinking about doing it as a class because she likes to host the hand stitching club classes. And this is like a big project that the Amy McClellan at Under the Garden Moon, I guess, did a big kit thing for Colchester Mills exclusively to have the whole thing as a full kit instead of month by month so that Nancy could teach a class.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm taking the class and there's like 10 of us there and it's really, really gorgeous.
Yeah. It's a cool thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's neat. And she has, you know how on YouTube you can have videos that you have to have a password to get into?
Yeah.
So she has video tutorials that go with it that we have the password to that explains every single thing. So we have some new people, some brand new stitchers. And we have two that I think haven't done any stitching really. And then we have one quilter who doesn't do a lot of handwork.
Uh-huh.
So handwork is new. And so the videos really step-by-step explain everything, explain needles, explain thread, explain the needle sizing, why the needles are sized the way they are. She talks about everything. Hmm. And then she shows the stitching and how to do the stitches up close. And then what you get is you get this pre-printed linen fabric, beautiful linen, really tight, high count, tight weave linen for embroidery.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pre-printed on there with all the little spots where your needle goes in and out and the lines and all the things. So you don't even have to go, where do I put my needle in? It's like, put it in right here where the dot is.
Well,
comes out here. And yeah.
Now from the pictures, it looked like a stitch sampler for all intents and purposes.
Pretty much. Yeah. It's like you learn the stitches as you go through. And it's the book when it's finally finished is about 2.5-3 inches thick, and you sew it together by hand.
The project book is that thick?
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy smokes. I didn't get that. Cute. So this is a serious project then.
Mm-hmm. Ah. Yeah, I didn't take a picture of it side on. I took a picture of it from the top.
Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't take a picture of it side on, but,
wow.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's fun.
So this ends up, especially if you haven't done any surface embroidery, this ends up being a real good school thing. Like,
yeah,
when you're done, you at least have a repertoire of stitches that you can pull from. Wow.
Yep, we're going to do bullions and all the things.
Wow.
And Nick, it's fancy. And which I'm really happy about because I have some wool applique that I haven't done yet because I've been like, I have the Sue Spargo book and I know I could do these things, but you know how sometimes when you're just on your own, you're like, I'll just do this over here that I know how to do, you know? Right.
Oh yeah.
You get a little lazy or a little like, it sounds like a lot of work, but now it's this awesome class with this gorgeous little book and all the threads come and everything. And yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. I know what you mean about, it's real easy to, if you have multiple projects going, if one's going to be a real challenge to, I'm going to go over here with path of least resistance. But then those ones that are real challenges, if you dig in, you know, most of the time it's like, oh, this is fun. And you just go.
And then you're like, oh, it wasn't that hard. But sometimes just the getting started part can be kind of like, you don't know where. It's like, what do I do? So this really gets you going.
Yeah.
And
what do I do? And oh, I got to work at this. I'll just make some X's over here on this project and just do mindless stuff. And
And I've looked at her website, the Under the Garden Moon website. She's got some cute stuff.
Yeah, I went through it. Goodness. I went through it because I wrote to her to see if she'd do a show.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, I went through and she has some really nice stuff. Yeah.
Make sure you mention to her that I'm doing the class at Colchester Mills that she did the things for. Maybe she'll bite.
I hope she will. I hope she will.
I know. Yeah. She's got some cute stuff.
Yeah, she's one of those multifaceted textile art, cross stitch. Yeah, the whole bit. So,
yeah. So I was like, oh my. But yeah, I'm excited about this little book. It's very cute.
Yep. Well, it's more than a little book. That's a lot. Wow. Didn't realize.
Yeah, because I mean, it's a lot of stuff that I've never done.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I can, but I've never done it. And then I bought my first tulip needles.
Yeah.
I bought the milliner needles.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have any milliner needles. And I bought milliners and an embroidery number 5 needle, which I don't have. So I got that. But I had chenille and I had tapestry needles.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Milliner's the key to bullion. The key to bullion stitches, milliner needle. Yep.
Yep. 3 different sizes.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Apparently, it's also the key to colonial and French knots.
Oh, now, really?
I can make French knots work with the cross-stitch needle.
You
pull it tight, and you have to give it a little, because, you know, the head of the eye is fatter than the shaft of the needle.
Right.
So it gives you a little trouble, so you have to wiggle it down a little.
Yeah.
But I can do French knots pretty good, but I've never tried them with a milliner's needle. So I'm curious to see if that'll like up my game, and I'll be like, oh my gosh, it's so much better.
Well,
I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, see, that's interesting, because I mean, I don't have, making French knots is no big deal to me, but for some people it's a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because they don't hold the main thread.
Yeah, you got to pull it tight.
Yeah, you got to pull that thing tight. I think that's why people have trouble, is they don't hold
it
tight
enough. And you have to keep it all the way through. Don't let it go.
Yep.
And she shows that in the video, because she showed how to do a colonial knot, which I've only done like 3 colonial knots. I need to watch that video a lot and get those colonial knots down. But she shows how, and she stresses, you know, pull this one and hold it. Don't let go.
All the way. The way. You can't let up. And once you get that going, those go fast and they all look.
Yeah. And it's perfect.
Yeah.
So I am really interested to try it now with the proper needle, because I've never done it with the proper needle.
Yeah, I'll be curious to hear now, because if
I know, because remember I got that little thing, that little project that it's all French and colonial knots.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've worked on it some, but I haven't in a while. So I'm going to use only the milliner's needle from now on instead of the cross stitch needle.
Well, I'll be most curious to hear if that's a different experience.
Yeah, I know.
Because it makes sense. Because mm-hmm. The milliner needle for bullion stitches is because you don't have the fat head eyelet to fight with. It makes sense that it would be the same with French knots, but I've just never had any trouble with French knots. But now, you know, because you don't have to deal with a fatter eye, do you end up with more consistency?
Right. Because sometimes, you know how we've gotten used to it with the fat head, that we know how to make that little allowance. But sometimes it's too much allowance. You're like, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like, whatever, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
You can do pretty consistent, but every now and then it fights you back and you end up with a sort of wonky French knot that you just live with because you're not going to take it out.
Right. Well, yeah, taking them out is such a pain. I mean,
I can do it. I've done it, but you got to be careful because if you split your thread too much, then you just ruin the whole thread.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, and then how many have to come out? Yeah. Then it's not like you can just back up 3 stitches and bury it and start again. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I've only done it with DMC. I can't imagine trying to undo a French knot in silk. I mean, forget it, right?
From my experience, forget it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just frayed, and that one, if once you redo it, it just stands out because it's just beat up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just been my experience. Maybe I'm sure there's somebody out there who takes them apart all the time, but.
Maybe, but
last time I ended up taking out, I'd done several and ended up just taking them out and starting over. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Pay attention, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but then that adds stress to it, you know? So then French knots become stressful and, but no, it's hold, that's the trick is, and I know that people have trouble. You can just about bank on it that they just don't hold that base thread tight all the way through the stitch.
Right.
I mean, all the way through. And they let go at some point, and that's when it gets sloppy.
Yep, because then it just does what it wants. And
And you can't even count on it doing what it wants the same every time.
I know.
It's just a train wreck. Yeah.
Yep. Depends on how much your thread is twisted, if it's under twisted or over twisted.
Right. Yep.
We'll do all kinds of stuff.
Yep. All right.
Maybe you have one of those threads that has a mind of its own anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then if you're doing a metallic thread, that'll make you slow down.
I'm excited to try a milliner's, like French knot and all of them in milliner's. And I bet you I'll always have one on hand.
Yep.
It'll change my life. I know it.
Well, now I want to experiment.
Yeah. Give it a try yourself. Yep.
And now I want to experiment.
Ooh, and on my tamaris, because I've been doing my French knots on my tamaris with, I have used a chenille cross, chenille needle, basically a pointy cross stitch needle. But it has been Pearl 5, so maybe it's not as big of a problem, but still.
Yeah.
Something to think about.
Yep. Yep. I still think it's so cool that that night that we had what's her name on with Tamari and that wrapping it tighter. Yeah, Jen.
Jen Weber. Yeah. Yep. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I still think that's one of the coolest things is that it basically changed Tamari for you.
Totally. It did. We had class this weekend, and I wrapped my ball all tight, and my stitches are staying right where I put them, and that's so satisfying.
That is so cool.
That where I put my stitch, it stays. It's moving. It's not like, I'm going to go over here. It's all of that's gone now.
That is so cool. It's just awesome. That one little thing, you know?
Yeah. I thought looser was better. No.
Yep. They talk about that. You know, how many people say, no matter how experienced you are taking classes, you almost always learn something.
Mm-hmm.
And in this instance, we're just having a conversation and showing off a designer's work, and you pick up that one little tip.
Yeah.
And it's game changing. Like,
how hard do you make your balls? it's made a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah. So. That is still one of the coolest things, because mm-hmm. that's just it. And you like, I mean, you hang out with some rather talented Tamari stitchers.
Oh yeah.
Serious stuff.
They make beautiful stuff. Our teacher makes gorgeous. Yeah. So you should see what we're doing next month. Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
but see, it's not like you're hanging around with rookies. Is my point? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, when something as game changing as that comes up, you know, you guys have been doing beautiful Tamari work for a long time.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, now, all right. So then, have you shared that with the rest of the group, or yeah, were they already wrapping it tight, or
maybe theirs were tighter than mine? I don't know, but mine were getting, I think, way too loose. And maybe they stitch a little different than me. Maybe they dig in more. And Jen said to just kiss the ball. So now that's how I do it. I just kiss the ball and get two or three little threads. And then I wiggle it back and forth to make sure it'll stay. And then most of the time, only every now and then do I have to dig a little bit deeper to get it to wiggle it to make sure it's going to stay.
Yeah.
But most of the time, it's just perfect every time, and I'm just so happy.
That is so cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Little things that make the difference.
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, see, and I think in general, it's the little things that are the difference between nice needlework and eye-popping needlework.
Mm-hmm.
The people with the experience, that what the experience is the little things like that they've learned over the years or picked up from others that just put their needlework on a different level from, you know, every common, you know, regular stitcher. And it's going to classes, it's communicating with other stitchers, and you just pick up these tips and try them, and this one works for me and this one doesn't.
You'll see somebody do something in a way that you're like, I've never seen it done that way. And you try it, you're like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fantastic. And you know, there's whole, is it the right way? Is it the wrong way? Well, it's like, whatever way works for you is the right way.
Yeah.
You know, now I know the Royal School has their opinion and they're probably right, but for the rest of us.
Well, but even they, this is the way we do it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the way we've done it forever. And a lot of what's behind that is
consistency.
And we need, in many projects, we need to have a bunch of people come in and work, and we need to know it's all being done the same way.
Yeah.
So multiple that all makes people sense.
Working on the same thing. It's because it's basically a big collective that works on one project.
Yeah.
So everybody has to do it the same.
Yeah. Yeah, you're making Princess Diana's dress and 50 people got to be involved. And you
can't have 50 different styles going on. It's going to be just a mess.
Right.
You know?
Right. But even that, you know, how many people have we talked to where studied, graduated, got the certificates, whatever, from the Royal School, and then went off and did their own thing their way, but it's the foundation that it gave them that allowed them to branch out.
Yeah, the understanding of how thread and needle and certain threads work, and because threads behave differently.
Yeah.
And you've got to know how to manipulate them to get them to cooperate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they can be fussy.
The right way. No, it's the way that makes your needle work look the way you want it to work. That's the right. That's the right way.
And, right.
Anybody who goes into police mode to tell you're not doing it right, just quit listening to them, because there's a million ways, and if it gets it done and it looks right.
Yeah. You run into that in quilting a lot.
Oh, I'll bet. Oh, I'll bet. Yeah. Oh.
And I'm just like, what happens in my seam allowance is my business. You just mind yours.
Oh, I can imagine that community of
Can, and then there's a whole another group of them that are like, no, just freestyle quilt. You know, they're who is it? Oh, I can't remember her name right now. Gail Larson, maybe. She does this liberated quilt making. Gail Marston. Let me look it up. Liberated quilt making. I can look it up real quick here.
Because that, you know, that whole thing, and that's probably why, well, I would never do quilting anyway. It just doesn't interest me. But you
know, Gwen Marston.
Gwen Marston.
Was close. Gwen Marston. She does liberated quilt making, where you make all the same traditional blocks, but you let it be wonky.
Okay.
And because it's all wonky, it looks really cool.
Uh-huh.
And it's for those people who want to quilt but don't want to worry about matching up their points and stuff.
Right.
Perfect. I've made a couple of her liberated quilt making style quilts, and I loved it. So enjoyable.
Yeah.
Because you just go.
Yeah. A long time ago, it was a lady in a town where I worked who had a quilt shop.
Mm-hmm.
And she was actually the wife of the owner of the company I worked for.
Oh.
And very successful, well-known, blah, 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 blah. And I went over there, I forget, went over to her shop one day, I forget, oh, it was to help her with some computer issues. Mm-hmm. And it was talking about quilting, and the intensity and the, you know, that it just reeked of there's only one way or the highway, and if your points don't match, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I just walked out of there going, that's not relaxing or fun to me.
Mm-hmm.
Forget
that. It
can
be that way.
Yeah. So. And she was just so intense that I just, no, thank you. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the people who enter the shows that want to win the big prizes and get their quilts touring around, they're like that, but they're, you know, there's a reason because they want their quilts to be in the big shows and to tour around.
More power to them.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she just, you know, it was just this, and it was the air in the shop of this just tension.
I've been in maybe one or two quilt shops like that. Most of the ones I go to are, they're more chillax. They're like, you know, don't worry about perfect. Done is better than perfect.
Uh-huh.
What a lot of us like to say.
Yep.
So, and like Colchester Mills fabric, they're not like that at all. It's like mistakes are okay. Just work around it, you know, put an embellishment over it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what is it? Gail, Gayanne Rogers says a lot. Perfect is the enemy of good. Yeah.
Or done, you know?
Yeah, or done, yeah.
You want to at least get it done.
Yeah. It may be perfect. It may be perfect, but you only got two blocks put together. Yeah, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to just push through, get it done. Because really, when you stand back and look, you're not going to remember where that mistake was anyway.
Right. Right.
And what normal person that doesn't stitch is going to look at it and go, oh, look right there.
Yep.
You made a mistake.
Yep.
They're not going to know. They're just going to see the whole overall thing and be blown away.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, that's the Hannah Longstreth sampler that I finished. It hangs opposite the doorway to my studio office here. And so every time I walk out the door, I look at it.
Uh-huh.
And there are two errors in there that I know of. And to this day, I couldn't find them for you.
Right.
You know, and I stressed out over those and almost tore two motifs apart. Skip it. I'm letting it go. I literally, you know, I don't know where they're at. I know they're there, but I couldn't point them out to you. So skip it. You know?
Yep. And doesn't it feel good to let it go?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there were plenty of them that I tore out and redid, but yeah, there's two. I'm not tearing this out. I'm moving on, and now I can't find them.
I only tear out if it's really going to affect the rest of the design in a major way, and if I can't fudge it.
Yeah.
Like that Alice in Wonderland, the whole arch thing, I was off, and it would have affected everything, though. It was in the middle, and it would have set everything off kilter.
Mm-hmm.
I had to take it out and fix it. There was no choice.
Yeah.
There was no fudging. I looked to see if I could fudge it, and I couldn't.
Yep.
I was like, oh.
Then you have to. You don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. Then. Yeah. Yeah.
But I check to fudge it first.
Yeah.
I'm like, does it really matter?
Nope. Well, on the Sarah Parr sampler, the border, I was doing it as I went along, mm-hmm. and half stitch off.
Yeah, so you can just fudge
one
that.
Thread. So, and I had, I, what I did was I tore back around to the side, and I just did a half stitch wide cross, and you can't find it. You can't right. see it, but I put it over to the side in a place where it, you know, wouldn't show at all, and mm-hmm. then stitched it, and it all came out, and it was fine. And
right.
Yeah.
I did that in that Spring Hill. In the fill-in part in the bottom, I got half a stitch off somewhere, and I was doing the fill-in. I saved the fill-in to the very end, and I noticed, and I'm like, oh, and I'm like, whatever, just fill it in.
Yep. Yep. Like, it's just a solid field anyway. Yep. Who cares? Yep.
I'm like, if you look close, you'll probably be able to find it again, but nobody else will know.
Yeah, somebody comes over, gets a magnifying glass out, and starts looking. You stand behind them and smack them upside the head. Yep.
Right.
Get out of here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep. All right. So you guys, at least in the near future, are hoping to buy a house and move. And therefore,
we might be waiting a year or two.
Yeah. Well, now with interest
the
rates,
market,
I'm sure.
The market is so bad and the interest rates are insane. And we're like, we're still keeping an eye on things, but we're not
actively.
No.
So it, but what it comes down to is it's going to be your chance to have a craft room, for lack of a better label.
Yeah.
And so you're the person I know who has that on the horizon.
Oh, yes.
And so, and then, you know, I had an empty room that I built my way, the way mm-hmm. I wanted it. And now, 2 years later, I look back, or I look at it, and, you know, what would I do different?
Yeah.
What you know, because I planned it all out.
Have
oh, yeah.
Have you found anything?
Storage.
Yeah.
Storage.
Oh, okay.
Yep. I did not do that right. I did not appreciate how valuable plenty of storage space is. And the storage space that I have in the shelves at the end of my work table and in a little four-drawer dresser, they're all full.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a full closet. And that is just a jumbled mess.
Oh, no.
And I always was going to put shelving in there. But now I'm doing serious thinking, because I bought a bookshelf to put in there, and it's kind of a half-baked idea collection in there. Mm. And I really wish when I was putting this room together that I had started there.
Yeah.
And built the shelving while all the stuff was still in moving boxes.
Right.
Built the storage, built plenty of storage. Because now everything has to get moved out. You know, I've got stitching out, so I'm going to be painting and, you know, all the construction things to do it. And so I'm going to have to cover everything up to make sure it doesn't get mm-hmm. dust on
it. Is there another room you can put it all in the meantime?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Move
I could
it all
do that.
Out and then build some shelves in there. Because if you have just plain shelves, you can always use bins and other stuff
right.
to have it all compartment. Cause that's what I did build shelves for the closets, the two closets in these bedrooms that we don't use as bedrooms.
Uh-huh.
And I did build shelves and put them in there, and they've been great. Cause then, you know, I put bins and shove it all but I need a lot more storage.
Right.
Like, because that's the key to keeping it clean and tidy is you need to have, you need to be able to put your project all in one little bin thingy, put it away.
Yep. And see, that's where I missed
out.
That's where I missed out. I did not build. I did not appreciate how much storage I needed, and I should have started with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because then everything else would be so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And the crazy thing is, that's money-wise the cheapest part.
pretty much. Yeah. You know,
probably. It's just a bunch of boards.
Mm-hmm.
It really is the cheapest part. And yeah, so yeah, that's the one regret I have. Everything else I've been happy with: the lighting, the positioning of things, the flexibility. Right. But oh, storage.
Because you were focused on getting an area set up where you didn't have to completely take down and put up your recording studio.
Right, right.
That was a big deal.
Right, and I was successful at that. Yes. It sits here, it's out of the way when I don't need it, so I can use the table for stitching. Mm-hmm. And then for live shows, it's a very simple process to set that up, and you know, and be in the proper lighting, and you know, yeah, that worked out great. Mm-hmm. But the number of times in 2 years that I've had to stop and clean up and put things away because I don't have easy storage.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not easy to put stuff away. And so it piles up on tables. And then pretty soon I don't have any workspace. All right. Mm-hmm. I gotta, you know, make myself clean it all up. And it's just wasted time.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I really like, you know, I had to dismantle my whole room. But one of the things that I got is my friend gave me this gorgeous chest of drawers that I put my TV on it. And I use the drawers to put, the top one has like all of my Notion-y bits, all mm-hmm. my needles, all the little bits, you know?
Yeah.
And they're nice to have it in this big dresser drawer because I can space them all out and get to them easily without knocking other stuff over and digging, you know? Because sometimes on a shelf, stuff's in the back and you're digging for it. Well, in a drawer, it's all nice and tidy and you can see it and grab it.
Yep.
And then the middle drawer has my unfinished projects in it that need to get fully finished, like my FOs that need FFO'd.
Yep.
And then the bottom drawer has lots of my knitting. I put a bunch of my knitting needles and stuff down there, other stuff. But that's really nice. And then my other cabinet that I used to have all of my cross-stitch charts in, and some other, and all the kits and stuff. Well, I put all the charts and the kits in big tubs. So now that whole cabinet is open and I have all of my WIPs in there mm-hmm. laid out. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I really like it because I don't use project bags. You know, I'm not a project bag person. Yeah. And I like to have them all. And it's you close the cabinet, nothing gets in, they don't get dirty.
Right.
And I love being able to open the cabinet and go, I want to work on this one. And here's the box that has the threads.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I know what you mean about shelves. You get a mm-hmm. bunch of stuff on a shelf and you always need the thing in the back and then your arm knocks three things on the floor.
Yes.
It's like, oh, spare me. Just spare me. Yeah.
So drawers are really nice. And, you know, find a chest of drawers or something. If, mm-hmm. if you have space, like if one day when I have my big work area, I would love to have like those built-ins, the white built-ins that have cabinets and drawers in the bottom. And then the top are like where you can put your bookshelves and stuff and display your pretties.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah.
I would love to have that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. So, and then I could set up a little stitching area. I could have my sewing machine set up.
Yeah.
A little stitchy area. I could have an area to have my watercolor area set up when I become a famous watercolor artist.
Yeah. When that happens. Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it's, cause you know, the Husky tables, you know, Kim Young at Sassy Jack's told me about these Husky tables from Home Depot.
Right.
Oh boy. I am so glad that I listened to her and bought those tables because they are so sturdy and they're on wheels so they can be moved around. And I just am so glad I bought them. They have just been perfect. And, but they're tables. There's no, they're not desks. So they don't have drawers underneath and all that stuff.
Oh, right.
They're a work surface table. And for that, they're perfect. But yeah. So I got storage and, yeah, I don't think there's a silver bullet for storage. It's
kind of whatever. It depends on how you like to store things.
Yeah.
And what works for you.
Yep.
I've got all my stuff stored away now downstairs in bins and stuff. And it's, when I want something, I can find it because I labeled it all.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I put where and I labeled it, which is important. take yes. your masking tape, your big masking tape that you use, you know, the big, what, 2.5 inch thick stuff, and a Sharpie, and you just write on that what it is and stick it on the outside. And that way, if you change what's in it, you just rip it off and make a new label. Yep. And I label it on all four sides and the lid. I am a super labeler.
Oh, well, now, see, but, you know, initial reaction, that's excessive, but no, it's not.
No, because when you're looking, you don't want to have to turn a bin to try to see what the heck, where the label's on the backside. Oh, no, it gets labeled all around.
Oh, see. All right. There, you know, little thing. Little difference making thing.
Oh, there. I've been doing that for years because I learned a long time ago. You got to have the label all the way around.
Well, yeah, you're in a hurry. You shove it in. The label's at the back. Oh, geez.
You know? And that way you don't have to worry about it. You just put it up. Right. The label is there no matter what.
Yeah. And the label's in the back and it's the bottom one in a stack of four.
Right.
Yeah. Every time. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I'll see. That's a good one. Yep. That's a good one.
So no, it's all, it's all down there and organized and, and like, you know, I'm working on a couple of hand quilting things and each one of those has its own small, you've seen those little small totes that have like a handle on it. So some of my quilting projects are in those. It's handwork stuff, but all the stuff's in it. And when I want to work on it, I just bring it out and open it up and pull it all out and it all goes right back in and
boop. Yeah. You know?
Like when my husband goes out of town and I turn the whole living room into a work area.
Because you can.
I know. I was like, and even the dining room table had my little ironing thing, my ironing mat, my mini iron.
Yep.
He wasn't here, so I just exploded all over the place with all my crafts.
What day are you coming home? I need 24 hours to put it all back.
I know. No, he came home. It was still all out. I was like, you can go to bed or go sit in your office, but it's my space right now. There's no room for you.
Yep. Okay, well, there was, I learned something already from you, so I figured there's something in there. Yep.
Okay. I'm always full of useful tips.
I gotta get some wood and start building shelves. And You know, Margaret's mentioned more than once, when are you going to put shelves in that closet and store stuff right? Yeah, I know. Yep.
Yeah, that's one of the first things I did when I was like, I need storage and I need to build shelves. So I built shelves first thing way back.
Yeah.
I did it myself, too.
Yeah.
The guys at Home Depot cut the boards for me. That's it. So.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing is these days is, you don't need a big fancy saw to cut everything square. They will cut for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's like,
I mean, this was 16 years ago they did that for me. So.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, four cuts or something, and then you pay some token fee for the rest of the cuts. So what? Yeah.
Yeah.
You walk out of there with a set of boards that are all ready to go.
And, yep, and I measured all my, and you know, you've got to measure the back, the middle, and the front to make sure, what if your closet's wonky?
Right.
You got to know these things.
What if your closet's wonky? Your closet will be wonky.
You never know.
Measure. Your closet will be wonky.
Yeah. It's an old house. It could have shifted. Yeah. So. Yeah. No, my closet's pretty square, but I checked my measurements.
Yeah. No, no, they're never square. Yeah. Measure them. Yeah. Yep. So, okay. Yeah. And I have the fancy miter saw, or I can cut stuff all day long. So I just got to go buy the boards, and that was something watching DIY people paint your boards, prime them, and paint them before you install them, and then touch them up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't put them in and then paint them because it's twice the work.
Mm-hmm.
Paint, prime everything, and paint and. Don't use that primer paint all in one
combo.
That
stuff is crap. And even the paint that says it's like the really, I buy the expensive paint that says one coat. I use two.
No, yeah.
I use two coats of paint. I don't care if it says one.
Yeah, no.
You can tell the difference.
Yeah, you can. Use a good primer. Use a good primer. Do a light sand after you prime. And,
on the wood. Yeah. I was thinking my walls. I'm like, sand my walls.
No, on wood, like wood shelves, you do a light sand after your prime, not a lot.
Like a high count, like what, 600?
I use 400, but yeah.
Okay, but you know, yeah.
But, and that's difference making, because then you get a nice smooth finish, and then, yeah, mm-hmm. two coats.
Yes.
And get a good primer. Don't just buy some cheap primer. Get a good Zinsser primer.
Yeah.
So it seals the wood, and you know, it's the old thing. Your prep work and good quality materials are difference making. You can spend the money and do it once, or you can go cheap and have it look like garbage, and you kick yourself for not. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
It's very, very true.
It sure is.
It's always true. It's like always the case.
Yeah. Yep.
No matter what you're doing.
Buy cheap, buy twice, every time.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, we're running out of time. Overrated, underrated. Kits. And I'm not talking. I'm not talking about going to Sassy Jack's and having Kim kit up a
right.
But a kit that comes from a designer, or that you buy in a store already made up.
Well, if you know that you like the count of fabric that you want it that size, I think it's fantastic, because then it's all there. But if you want to like do it on a smaller size fabric, you could still do it, and then you just put the fabric in your stash and it's a different fabric.
Mm-hmm. So overrated, underrated?
I don't know. I think people love kits, though.
Yeah. See, I think good kits are underrated.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Because I'm like, but people love kits. Everybody wants a kit.
Yeah. I think they're underrated. And I'm talking kits like you would get from Avlia. Like if you got a Krista West kit, I think that is underrated, because she does all that grunt work for you.
Right.
And you know, when you open that bag, that you have everything you need and then some to do your project.
Yeah.
Like you can screw up, throw away, and you're not going, oh, I'm going to run out of thread.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever had a kit where I was like, oh man, you know, if I didn't want to do that linen or that size or whatever, I just put it in my stash and get something else.
Yeah.
That would be the only thing that would ever
right.
be like, oh, the kit comes with 14 count and I really wanted to make it smaller and use 18. Just get 18 then.
Yeah.
Put the 14 in your stash and use it some other time.
Yeah. But for me, the only drawback for buying kits is if the designer or kit assembler is stingy with thread and is trying to give you just enough to do the job.
Oh.
Because, and I've had those kinds of kits where,
Man,
I'm out of this color, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
If it's DMC, if it's like a DMC kit, then.
Right.
I don't think I'd care. I don't know if I really buy DMC kits, though, because I have so much.
Right. Yeah. There's that. But for a lot of people, that's, you know, that especially if they're just doing one, you know, they'll buy a kit. It's all there. And
I did buy the kit for my temperature chart thingy, and I love it because it's all still in the little kit thing and it's all just in there perfect. And I didn't have to pull. I didn't want to pull the threads from my stash. I wanted them all to be separate because of the kind of project it was.
Yeah.
So I was very happy about a kit for that.
Yeah. Okay. Good kits.
Yeah.
Keyword good. Good kits from quality people. Underrated.
Yeah.
Big plus.
Yes.
If they're done right. All right. Mary Corbett, underrated, overrated?
It's got to be underrated because she knows everything. I mean, anytime you have a question, you just go on Mary Corbett. Oh, remember when I did my practice of the cutting and I did the work where I cut it out and then I had to wrap or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that little practice that I did?
Yep.
And how I cut with the scissors one way and then I cut with the scissors the other way. And then I read on her thing that if you cut it the correct way, it doesn't leave those whiskery bits hanging out.
Yep.
I don't remember which way it was now. I'd have to go look again. But yeah, she said in there exactly how to do it. And I didn't have special fancy scissors. I just used my normal, you know.
Yeah.
But if you cut it on the correct side, whichever way she said to do it, it doesn't leave those whiskery bits hanging out.
Yep.
So I have one side with whiskery bits and one side without. But it was my practice piece. They do. They look like little whiskers sticking out.
New technical term, whiskery bits. Yeah.
That's right.
Yep. No, I think she's underrated. And underrated is relative, because anybody who has been exposed to Mary praises her to no end. But I don't think any of us fully appreciate what a treasure she is to the needlework community, no matter what your technique.
Mm-hmm. She does do it all, right?
Yep. That website is gold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I challenge you.
A lot of times when you look up, you look something, just Google something.
Yep.
To see who, she always comes up.
Every time. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I challenge you to have a problem and not find a solution on Mary's site.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good luck.
It's and explained there. Very well, too.
Yep. It's there. I guarantee it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Needleandthread.com. Mary Corbett is, yeah, underrated, just because even if you're a big fan, you still, I don't think it's possible to appreciate what she does. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which reminds me, we need to get her on a show again. Yeah.
She's the one that went and got the second apartment down the street from her house for her studio, right?
Yeah, but now, no, she's moved out of that. She's in a storefront now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she got a storefront. She needed more room.
Old news, huh?
Yeah, no, she's in a storefront in town and has somebody working with her. Yeah, no, her business has, and that's another thing, her newsletter. Just get on her mailing list so you get her regular updates, because something in there every time. And, you know, and primarily she's a surface embroiderer. I mean, that's the bulk of what she does. If you never do surface embroidery in your life, couldn't care less, got no interest, still follow Mary Corbett. You will learn things.
Mm-hmm.
Guaranteed. Yep. Yep. I think too many times people compartmentalize people like her, designers. Oh, that's needlepoint. I'll never do needlepoint. Follow it. You'll learn something about threads. You'll learn something about beginning and ending threads. You'll learn something about needles. You'll learn something about something that will help you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All I do is cross stitch. I don't have any interest. No, you should. You'll be amazed what you learn. Yeah.
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 Maybe you need a little cross stitch break, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. Yeah. That's the biggest cure to burnout is try a different technique. You might, you might learn something. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Thread bobbins.
So what, like bobbinating, like how I do it?
Yes.
I love them. Oh my God. I love them to no end. So I think they're
underrated or overrated?
Underrated. They are the best thing. I think thread drops are overrated. I think it doesn't protect your thread. I think you handle it too much. You pet it. You touch it. It gets hairy. It gets dusty. It's bad. If it's in a little bobbin, it's nice and wrapped up perfect and tight and awesome.
All right. All right. So two different, well, but two different things. All right. So let's take thread bobbins. I think I'm also underrated. I use them. I love them. It's easy to organize your threads. Yeah. I don't think it, you know, a lot of people complain, oh, I got to sit there and wrap the thread around.
It takes 5 seconds.
Yeah. And put a good movie on and sit there with a bunch of skeins and just wrap your threads. It gets creases. That's wrapping too tight.
Yeah, and I don't care. I wrap tight, and the creases don't bother me.
Yeah.
They don't look any different. Yeah, it's maybe a little bit fussier to work with, but not really. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I don't either. I've had creases, and to me, it 4 or 5 times through the ground cloth, and those creases are pretty much gone anyway.
Right.
So
the biggest problem with tangling is if you look at the very end of your thread, if it's frayed, you got to trim that thing off.
Yeah.
Because that causes tangling.
Yeah.
And then, when you stitch, you twist your needle as you go. Once in a while, you have to hold your needle up, grab the tail, and pull it and untwist it all, and then let the tail loose and let it unravel and twist. Mm-hmm. And then if you relax your thread down, if it all twists up, you got to hang that and untwist it too. that's what causes tangling.
Yeah.
Is frayed ends and twisted threads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I let mine dangle every half dozen stitches or so.
I mean, I notice I'll take a few stitches and it's all twisted and I have to unroll it.
Right.
Let it dangle.
Yep. Yep. Okay, we agree.
Yeah.
We agree on thread bobbins.
Yes.
Thread drops.
And I even have, like, for, like, other sewing, I have these, you get thread on these little bobbins for, like, hand sewing. And I even love it on those, like, little, these different bobbins. That's what I thought you were talking about at first. Is other, other bobbins.
Not sewing machine bobbins. The scourge of sewing machines. I hate those things.
Whatever, they're fine.
Okay, so thread drops.
Yeah, I'm not. I remember I tried them.
Yep.
I tried it. And that lasted like 5 seconds. I was like, no, this is over. I do not like thread drops.
Okay. See, for me, thread drops are underrated in one specific situation. And that's if you're doing a project where you can pre-cut your threads to a specific length or a length. And so you can sit down with a skein of thread and pre-cut to a length. And I'm talking about, this is what I do for samplers.
Right.
Then
I still put that in the little bags, the floss away.
Well, see, for
me, I have a couple projects that are pre-cut and they're in floss away bags.
For me, it's, I find that they stay better organized in thread drops.
Oh.
If they're pre-cut.
Oh.
So,
for me, I don't know. I don't like it.
thread drops on a big ring, metal ring.
Uh-huh.
For me.
See, I fold them. You take them and you gently fold them and tuck them in the floss away bag and then put that on the ring.
Yeah, see, I'd rather they would be in the thread drop.
Okay.
Because for me, they get tangled up in the bag. I just think they stay nicer. But then... But that's the only time I use thread drops, and that's for like for samplers where I'm cutting like 15, 18 inch lengths of silk.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll mark on there, and then I'll have a ring. These are all the colors for this sampler. That's the only time I use thread drops. Otherwise, it's bobbins or floss away bags. So, yeah, and then but then I keep them covered up.
Yeah.
I don't, because I agree with you 100% about they're exposed, they're out in the open, exposed to light, they get handled, so on and so forth. I keep them covered up and, because I don't like them exposed. Yeah.
Yeah. I am a bobbin and floss bag. I love the bobbins. I absolutely love them. And I buy the cardboard ones now because the plastic ones are crap.
Oh, now see, I buy the plastic ones.
No, they changed the way they made them, and the little slits don't hold anything. The cardboard ones, the slit grabs the thread properly. And it's just the end, so, it's all fine.
Yeah.
Darice, the company that made the stuff back in, the 90s, is Darice. And they made fantastic bobbins that are exactly like the cardboard ones that DMC makes now, and the plastic is exactly like the cardboard. It would like almost touch. It was just a slit cut in it.
Yeah.
And then they started making them where they have that big curved out hole, that big curved out channel that doesn't hold anything, and your floss just falls apart all over the place. I hate those.
Oh yeah, I don't like those. The ones I use have a slit, and you just wedge your thread in there.
Oh. No, nope, yeah. I like the little cardboard ones.
I've always used plastic.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. Well, and they store better. They store so easy. Yeah.
Yep.
Because, for cotton floss, I'll use those bobbins. Then for threads where you don't, like heavier threads, pearl cotton, that kind of stuff, then that's floss away bags for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All my pearl cotton that I use for tamari is in a plastic tubby, all smushed, folded in half. with the tag still on, you know, the number, and laid in, and that's where it stays. Because okay. that's the only thing I use it for is tamari.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I like my thread drops, so.
Oh, yeah. See, I tried it. I did not like it. Yeah. Very strongly did not like
yeah.
it.
No, I got the message. Yeah, I got the message. Yeah. yeah.
I have big feelings about those.
Yeah, you don't have to put any more emphasis on it. I got it. I got it. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
So, all right. That's going to be it. Holy. All oh, right. yes. Oh, I didn't even watch the clock. Yeah, that's it. We're done.
Oh, okay.
Holy smokes. I don't even know. I wasn't I'm even like, watching.
We'll just chat forever, whatever.
I wasn't even watching. All right, so Sunday is Gail Patterson's partner, Susan John. Some amazing artwork on several fronts. You'll want to check that out. And then next Wednesday, we will have a Stitch Hour. Thanks for listening.
All right, bye.